And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Well, Dave, this is the July 4th weekend. The president is celebrating by signing his one big, bad, beautiful bill, or whatever the hell it's called. Puts us really in a country very different than the one you grew up in and the one I grew up in. And I think it puts us in a country that we have yet to understand the ramifications of, because this thing has just been signed and it's, you know, gigantic in its provisions and it's encompassing in its in its impact in every aspect of American life. But what do you think of it? How do you approach this thing?
Oh, boy. A lot of damage that's going to be done to the country. And as you said, it's got very broad ramifications. Economically, this just increases the gap between the rich and the poor. And in fact, the rich and the super rich and the middle class, it continues this trend. We know on the easy part is on the taxation issues that the higher your income, the more you get to save, and the lower your income, the more actually negative effect it has on your finances. But the propaganda is such that, you know, they use all sorts of tactics. This is what the Republicans are really good at. There's two things. One, they're eliminating all waste, fraud, and abuse, which of course they can't find, although there is some, but the stuff that really matters that's coming from their donors doesn't get touched.
Yeah, but they have a different understanding of waste, fraud, and abuse. They don't They don't specify it, but what they feel is that anything that benefits working class people is a waste.
Yes.
And that, so therefore you eliminate it.
Right.
What you think of the word, of the meaning of the words waste, fraud, and abuse is something that's stolen or that's illegitimately spent against what the intended law is. That's not what they mean.
Yeah, like what Rick Scott's company did on Medicaid.
That's right. It stole how many billions from Medicaid?
Hundreds of billions. Hundreds of millions, whatever. It was the largest.
It was the largest Medicaid fraud in the country at the, up to that time, in the history of that of the program. Right.
Right. So we had that that view of things. And then we had the second view of things that we were getting that the Secretary of Treasury mentioned and some senators. Senator from Oklahoma, I saw him on Mark Wayne Mullen, I think is his name, when he talks about how by getting the wealthy more money, that in effect, the effects are going to trickle down to the rest of the people. You know,
yeah, but that's been a persistent line of these right wingers for years, and it's never happened
since Reaganomics.
See, that's right. It's never happened. Every time they've tried it, and they've tried it five times or six times, it did not work. How many times do you have to try something? How many times do you have to hit yourself in the head with a hammer to know that that's not going to cure your headache?
Well, that's the definition of insanity.
Yeah.
Doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result.
But maybe they don't expect a different result. Maybe they get the result that they do expect.
Exactly. This is what they want. They just cover it up with the rhetoric.
Right.
And we're going to see all sorts of ramifications. You know, we've already been told that in the rural areas in particular, the hospitals are going to, the healthcare systems, the doctors are all going to be negatively affected.
Well, they're projecting that 300 rural hospitals will close within this year.
Yeah.
That's a lot of hospitals.
Yeah. I mean, I think the epitome of the truth of that was the negotiation that they had with Senator Murkowski of Alaska, who said, I can't vote for this because of the negative effects it has on my, and it's a very, I talk about a rural state, it's almost all rural, it has on my constituents. So they made a bargain with her, in effect, to exempt Alaska or the effects in Alaska. And then she held her nose, she voted for the bill, and then came out and said, you know, I hope the House votes it down because it's such a bad bill. But I couldn't vote it down because she negotiated. She did what a congressman or a senator is supposed to do and stood up for her constituents. But by doing so, she harmed multiple time of other people in the United States.
Yeah, she harmed the rest of the country.
Yeah. I want to mention something. You know, I mentioned Senator Murkowski. There's a saying that elections have consequences. And the ramifications of the 2024 election in Pennsylvania had a huge consequence in this. We saw that in the Senate, the bill passed by one vote. In effect, it was a 50-50 tie, and the vice president had to break it.
Right.
Had Bob Casey beaten Dave McCormick, there would have been no tie-breaking vote.
Exactly.
Except in the back of my mind, I think that Susan Collins would have maybe come around. My evaluation of her is she's a moderate of convenience.
Right.
She could count, and she knew that if she voted, because she's up next year, she voted against it, it would still pass.
Right.
Then we get to the House. And in the House, we lost the vote here in my congressional district. Matt Cartwright got beat. And down in the Lehigh Valley, Susan Wild got beat. You flip those two votes, and all of a sudden, things look a lot different.
That's right, because it only passed by two votes in the House.
Yeah, I mean, it's a four-vote swing.
Yeah.
These things do have intense consequences. Now, I do want to talk about, because we do politics on this show, about the guy who beat Matt Cartwright, Rob Bresnahan. Earlier this week, I watched, there was a rally of about 50 or so people in front of his office on North Washington Avenue in Scranton, about his, whether he was going to vote for the bill or not. Remember, he made pledges that I'm not going to vote for anything that cuts Medicare.
He signed that letter.
Yeah. And of course, he's been caving on all of this stuff, as you know, he would, because he's like the rest of the Republican Party without a backbone or another part of their manhood.
Mm-hmm.
And then we found out, in addition to that, this week, even though he said that Congress should not be able to trade stocks, he made a big stock trade by selling a company, I think it's called Centene, which is in the healthcare area, because he knew that they would be hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he claims he doesn't have anything to do with it. These are automatically done. But the fact of the matter is, people found out very quickly that this trade had been made on his behalf. So he had two major provisions of what he ran on that he went back on this week. We have a chance in 2026 to correct that mistake. Although we don't have a candidate yet, we're going to have to see who emerges. But I would think that it's looking more tempting for Democrats to run against him. They just have to get somebody who's competent and knows how to run a campaign. We'll have to see how that emerges. But I did want to mention the importance of Pennsylvania.
How was it that Cartwright managed to get beat?
I talked to him after the election, and he said, he knew it was going to be a margin of error election. What they didn't know, what his pollster told them afterwards, was that there were all these new voters or very infrequent voters that came out to the polls. And Matt Cartwright actually got more votes this time than he's ever gotten. The problem was that the Republicans were able to bring out more than the difference between what Cartwright had gotten in previous votes and his vote this time. Now, that takes us, and I mean, there are people that feel that that won't happen again in an off-year election, and it won't happen again if Trump isn't on the ballot. But that brings us to another phenomenon. The night before the 4th, downtown Scranton always has a big musical show. They have the Northeast Philharmonic. The full Philharmonic was there this year for the first time in about 5 or 6 years. And they follow that with a fireworks display. And Courthouse Square is ringed. It's sort of like the Festa Italiana. They're ringed with all sorts of vendors and food trucks, except they're not all pizza trucks. they're more like ice cream and other things. Although I did see a place where you could either have chocolate covered or peanut butter covered bacon. I don't eat bacon.
Peanut covered bacon.
Yeah, whatever. Anyhow, very prominently, just to the side of the stage, was this tent that the Republican Party's been using for the Northeast Pennsylvania Republicans, and they were there signing up voters or handing out literature or whatever. They had a poll going on. They asked people, are you for ICE or against ICE? I was surprised they had, when I looked early on, they had about 15 or 20 for ICE and about 4 or 5 against ICE. I was surprised they had that many.
Mm-hmm.
But they had a big cutout of the president. And then my son pointed out to me they had signed their vote no on to retain the mm-hmm. three Supreme Court justices. Mm-hmm. But they were active. What was notable by its absence was the Lackawanna County Democratic Party. And it wasn't that they didn't.
I mean, there was no comparable Democratic Party tent.
Right, right. There was nothing there, as has been the case. Missing in action now for a couple of years with Chris Patrick. One of the people that introduced, because they're a co-sponsor, is the county. And Bill Gaughan, the Democratic commissioner, got up and gave a speech. He even quoted Ronald Reagan to try to get a zinger into the Republicans because they've ignored, you know, Ronald Reagan now mm-hmm. in many respects. But I talked to him after his speech, and I said to him, I said, you know, there's the tent over there with the Republicans. Where are uh-huh. our guys?
Uh-huh.
And he said, you know, he had talked to Chris Patrick about a week or so ago and said, look, we're having this event. There's going to be thousands of people. And let me tell you, there were thousands of people, despite the thunderstorm that went through about, 3 o'clock or whatever. This was a huge crowd, and it was a very lively crowd, and there was a lot of younger people there. And he said, Chris Patrick says, well, you know, we'll see about it. And of course, nothing ever happened because Chris Patrick doesn't do anything in that regard. There is an inkling going around that because they can't change party chairs until next year when there's an election for the committee people. And the committee people are the one that picks the party chair. So they're in a holding pattern, but I understand from multiple sources that they're trying to get a workaround on this. That there's some various Democratic organizations, like the one in the Abingtons and Dunmore and elsewhere, that are they just want to organize and do things to fill in the gaps.
So why don't they just do it? Don't forget about him. Ignore him.
There's part of that, and there's part of, you know, financing. They don't have any money, and I don't, you know, the county. I don't think that the county party has any money because I don't think Chris Patrick has raised anything. I've gone by the Republican headquarters in South Scranton, just over the bridge from downtown, on several occasions now, and their door is open, and they're working in there. The one storefront that had the Democrats had gotten and the state reps had put together across from City Hall in Scranton, a pretty prominent location, closed up after the 2024 election. It had been opened up to fight the increase of the Pennsylvania Water Company, of Pennsylvania American, but they were still staging in there. And there's nothing. I mean, I've gone to some of our more rural counties in recent years, and the Democrats have offices there, even though they're in the distinct minority, down in Adams County, out around Gettysburg, and down in Bloomsburg, which, I think it's Columbia County. They're there working, but our people are not. And it follows the party leader who isn't working, really.
Well, the truth is that any group of people who wanted to could band together and do what needs to be done. That if it's really true that you can't get rid of this guy, go around him. There's nothing in the party rules that says that you can't register people to vote, or that the Democratic Party has to give you the permission to register people to vote. This brings you to the New York mayoral primary that just took place, where this fellow Mamdani, who started the race completely unknown and with a 1% chance of winning, according to the polls, 1%, ended up beating Cuomo, the guy who's most like Patrick in New York State, a do-nothing guy, a guy who had a lackluster campaign, who didn't go to events, who didn't organize events, who didn't want to go to places where he could be questioned. And whereas, on the other hand, Mamdani organized an army of volunteers. At the peak, they had something like 60,000 volunteers out on the street going door to door. They knocked on 1.5 million doors, and he won the nomination.
By 12 points.
Huh? Yeah, by 12 points. That's exactly right. By 12 points. So it's futile to say, oh, he'll stop. He's stopping us. Forget about him. Go around him. Yeah. Make him irrelevant. If nobody wants to do anything, but you have a whole group of people who do want to do anything, but the ones in leadership don't want to do anything, vote with your feet. They don't have a patent on politics. They just have the right to sign the name of the Democratic Party. So, you know, when you run in a Democratic Party primary, you run as the committee to elect David Falk or the committee to elect whoever. If you win the election, all of a sudden you become the Democratic Party and you have the right to say, I'm the Democratic Party. If you're in a situation where he's preventing the party from developing, he is allowing the Republicans to capture the allegiance of young people, you almost have an obligation to not only ignore them, but to counteract them. Yeah. Either that, or don't claim that you're interested in politics or in public service.
Yeah. And the other thing that they're lacking right now is a person to rally around. I mean, you have the county commissioner, Bill Gaughan, but right now he's pretty much been neutralized in his position because his partner, Matt McGloin, pulled out and resigned. And Chris Patrick has one foot up on getting McGloin's replacement in the power there.
But there is someone who you have to organize against and run against. Actually two. And that's Donald Trump and his local surrogate, Bresnahan.
Yeah. Yeah. I also want to mention, you know, the state party, which has been bleeding voters as well. Sharif Street, who's a nice guy, but I haven't seen any great effects that he's done for the state party.
As far as I can see, sitting in the executive committee of a rural party, he doesn't exist. The state party doesn't exist. They have conferences that are meaningless. You can't even get lawn signs out of them in time to put up on the lawn.
Yeah. He's going to be running for Congress. Congressman Dwight Evans, who's had some health problems, has been there for almost around 20 years in a Philadelphia area district, has said he's not going to run for re-election. There's several people that have thrown their hats in the ring, but I would have to think that Sharif Street is the favorite, and I think that will take him out. I hope they have somebody in the state party that can replace him that has a lot more oomph. I don't know the intricacies of the people in the state party well enough to be able to prognosticate on that. But
yeah, but isn't that interesting? You're an active person. You're a politically active person. You go to meetings addressed by people who are lobbyists and who know exactly what you're now saying you don't know about. I bet you there's nothing to know, and that's why you don't know it.
Yeah. Yeah, it could be. I'm going to have to try to follow up on my contacts in Harrisburg to see about that. But anyway, we're, you know, it's going to be a very different atmosphere on the ground for next year when the elections come up because of, and that, you know, that's one of the things, one of the advantages that the Republicans have had is that people haven't seen the effects of what they're doing yet. And they may not see the full effects for a while on what they're doing. For instance, the
well, that's how it's structured. That's how the bill is structured.
Right, exactly.
To try to delay the effect after the election.
Right. For instance, the no tax on tips, that goes away after 2028.
Right.
So there's a good example that they don't let you know, and that was one of the problems with the Biden what he did on the infrastructure bill, is it hadn't really kicked in, partly because it funneled the money to the states for the states to do these projects rather than having the feds do these projects and being able to really show it for it. You know, it there was a sign up on the expressway leading out of downtown Scranton that got put up, and it wasn't an easy to read sign that got put up about it being part of the Infrastructure Act. But it really wasn't the way that Donald Trump would take credit for it. You know,
it really didn't say this project is brought to you by Joe Biden. It didn't say that.
Right. But it did say something like it was the certain act. And I noticed there's been a strip put over that even showing, oh, you know, who gets credit for the act now.
Right. Of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
And let me mention something else. The one thing that Donald Trump is really, really good at is showmanship. And a lot of what he does, this is nothing new, is to project an image of things, even though it might be a deceptive image. But that's what they do best. And the Democrats don't. They don't get it. They need somebody who's a showman to a certain degree, or like they say, a great communicator. But it goes beyond communications. You're dealing in visuals as well. And I was kind of ruminating over the weekend, like who would be a good candidate for 2028, and the name that keeps popping up in my mind that's different from all the other politicians is a Mark Cuban, who's been doing this work on prescription drugs for a long time, and who has it in with the billionaires in Silicon Valley and other things. But that's a long way off, and I don't think he's going to do that.
Plus, you don't know there's going to be an election in 2028.
Well,
just imagine there's going to be an election, because has been.
Yeah, well, I sent you a thing this week about how the 2025 project is working to try to either undo the election or to limit the election to such a great extent that they lock in a Republican majority and a Republican candidate. You know, 2025 project is the gift that keeps on giving. You know, it's the coal in, literally, it's the coal in people's stockings.
And you know, you can't overlook it. You can't say, oh, it's outlandish, it'll never happen. What just got passed is outlandish and did happen.
Yeah. And you can't say people weren't warned about it.
Right.
Everybody was talking about it, and people voted for, voted for Trump anyway. and they're believing he's doing what he said he would do until he does it to them. And then they kind of look dumbfounded, but there's that core group that says, I don't care if it hurts me. What we're doing is great for America, you know, making America great again. An example of a great slogan that people have bought into.
Which indicates why you have to really get behind what this is all about and point out that this is a disaster for working people. And you really have to emphasize the fact that most people, issue by issue, don't agree with it. They don't agree with it because they realize that if the program of the MAGA people is not stopped, their life is going to be undermined. Their life is going to be undermined. They're not going to have health care. They're not going to have the ability to go to school. They're not going to have the ability to retire. Poverty is going to threaten every person who isn't wealthy. It's just that simple. And it's inevitable. This is what is going to happen.
Yeah.
And if the Democrats can't go out and effectively campaign against that, effectively organize against that, somebody else will.
Yeah. I saw a video this week with an interview with Dr. Scott Galloway. You know, he's that marketing professor from NYU who's mm-hmm. been warning about a lot of things and the wealth gap. And he's been saying that. He said, look, when things go bad in this country, the wealthy are going to be able to leave. He even mentioned a couple places where he could go. Some place in Italy. He said, the rest of the people are going to be stuck back here. They don't have the means. He said, I can get health care anywhere in the world.
Mm-hmm.
He's a multimillionaire. He said, the poor people can't. And then he gave a great, a great line. He said, but the other thing is that we have a government that's being led by Michael Corleone, but it's being implemented by Fredo. I sent that to somebody and they said, what's Fredo? Who's Fredo? And I had to explain to them that Fredo was the other brother.
Yeah, the idiot brother.
It was the simpleton who was incompetent, right. Whatever, that one of that Michael Corleone actually had killed for disloyalty. I mean, if he'll kill his own brother for disloyalty, that's something that you know.
Unfortunately, it's not going to work that way here.
Yeah.
Not going to work that way here. It doesn't matter if it's incompetent.
Well, they don't want things to work.
They don't want things to work, exactly. So incompetence factors into it.
Except for them. And that's... you know, there's a new book coming out, The War on Science. I've only read a little bit of the blurbs on it, but it's the war on science, it's a war on education, because the more people know, the more they understand what's really happening. And they don't want people to understand that this is the old, you know, things with the religious cult leaders. You just listen to what we tell you, not what you're seeing or what you need, you know, to make up your own mind.
That's right. You know, and it's just to paraphrase the old saying that Joe Hill said just before he was executed, don't mourn for me, organize. Don't mourn for the past, organize now for the present and future.
Well, we'll see. We'll see next week if there's been any move to organize.
See you next week.
All right.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place.